Which would you prefer, sitting in a seminar taking notes or having fun with the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast? The Medicare podcast that sings along with Time Has Come Today. When given the choice, he presses one for English. It's Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Oh boy, it is the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. Thank you for joining us, ladies and gentlemen. We're so happy to have you with us today. We are here to help you understand that Medicare is not something to be afraid of. It's complicated, but it's not outrageously complicated. Most people can find out what they need to know with the proper guidance and the help of a little book that I wrote called Medicare for the Lazy Man. It's not only little, it is fairly cheap, fairly inexpensive. If you go to Amazon.com and search for Medicare for the Lazy Man 2022, it's got green numbers on the cover, you're going to find a book that will explain everything 95% of the people in the world need to know about Medicare. Now, there are always a few people around that are either not American citizens or they have a spouse that's a vastly different age and neither of them has ever worked. And those kinds of things can be addressed by me when somebody contacts me and says, here's my wacko situation. Tell me what I need to do. I can do that on an individual basis, but most people will get all the information they need to know by reading the book, Medicare for the Lazy Man. And you don't have to be lazy. I have actually many, many women read the book, and then they respond to me, I'm not a lazy man, and I read your book. So there. And that's just the way it goes. So I'm always happy when I make new friends, and many of these people become new clients after having read the book and asked me for what the cost of my recommended coverages is. And I tell them and they say, wow, that's a good deal. I think I'll sign up with you. That's what I live for. That's my modus operandi. That's my reason for being, my raison d'etre. And that's why I'm here. So the other reason we like to be here is because we kind of have fun doing our Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast every so often, three of them a week so far for the last couple of years and with growing listenership. And when I say we, I'm talking about Randy Carson, my spiritual guru and my investment advisor and the electronic engineer for the podcast. He makes it sound good, much better than I ever could. Hello, Randy. How are things going?
Doug, it is so good to see your bright and shining face this morning.
Well, that's because I washed it for a change. So it's you're a man of rare good taste, and I'm happy to be joining you for another episode of the podcast today.
I always look forward to these because, you know, you never know where we're going to end up with some of this stuff. But I do have something in mind for this morning that I just have to go and try it out. We haven't done it for a while.
All right.
Let's play Stump the Insurance Expert.
Ouch, ouch. That's not as painful as it sounds, I hope. All right. I'm willing to be stumped, Randy.
All right. It's just one question.
Okay.
What is the difference between Medicare Advantage and playing roulette in Vegas?
Okay. Now, we're not talking about Russian roulette, I assume.
No, just roulette.
Okay. So with roulette, there's a big wheel. With Medicare Advantage, there's big disappointment. Am I anywhere close to it?
No.
Oh, okay. I may have to give up on this one. This is a well-constructed lesson or a question that I'm not sure I have the answer to.
The answer to that is, at least in Vegas, you've got a small chance of being taken care of.
Well, there you go. Yeah, with a Medicare Advantage plan, it's likely to be very, very disappointing. And I'm looking at an Amazon Prime truck crawling through the neighborhood, and he was looking for a victim, it looked like. He was,
I thought
I was it. He looked in the window as he drove by, and I thought, okay, he's going to ring the doorbell. I hate it when he rings the doorbell, but he just kept going this time.
Yeah. So as you know, I hate Medicare disadvantage plans.
Of course you do. You have a relative and or friend. Well, you have a relative and you had a friend who were both victims of Medicare Advantage plans gone awry.
You know how you can spot a Medicare Advantage salesman?
He's the one creeping around, hiding in your bushes.
Well, it's easy to spot him out in public, too. They've all got a little red bruise on their forehead.
And where did that bruise come from, Randy?
From people hitting them in the head with a 10-foot pole.
There you go. Well, as I've said earlier, I think the 10-foot pole is not long enough for me, anyway. I don't want to get that close.
I'm digging a moat. Did I tell you I'm digging a moat now?
No, you didn't tell me that, but you've already got a nice swimming pool. What do you need a moat for?
To catch him in the front yard.
Oh, okay. Okay. Which keeps him out of the pool then?
It does. It does. They're just getting, you know, over the course of the last 3 years, 4 years, they're just getting a lot sneakier all the time. I saw one of them out the other day with a drone looking over our neighborhood, looking for places to sell a potential Medicare Advantage plan.
You would think a map would do the job just fine without a drone, but no.
You would. Yeah.
They're getting desperate. Well, I will say I'm very pleased that today I have not heard your alarm system go off. So they're keeping their distance from you as far as I can tell.
They are. They're doing pretty well, but you just never know. I have to keep my eyes open.
I don't blame you. Hey, listen, I've got several things here that you can choose from. If we're going to play Stump the Insurance Man, how about we play Stump the Audio Engineer? And I've got an article here that I don't know if it's going to be any good or not. It's called What Happens When COVID-19 Emergency Declarations End? And then I have another article called No Surprises, Understanding Your Rights Against Surprise Medical Bills. And then, of course, we always have the old standby, which is the MLM mailbag, the Medicare for the Lazy Man mailbag. What's your pick? What's your preference today?
You know, of that group of three, I think I'm going to go with the first one.
Okay, well, let's do that then. This is from the Kaiser Family Foundation, which I have been told repeatedly is a reliable source of information when it comes to Medicare and other health insurance related stuff, not related to Kaiser Permanente, which as the listeners may recall, was named as one of the four big insurance companies that is siphoning money out of the federal treasury based on fraudulent measurements of the health of their members. So, but that's a subject for another time. This one, the article is just released, and it's just a few days ago in April of 2022. The headline is Ending COVID-19 Emergency Declarations Will Bring an End to Flexibilities That Aided Patients, Providers, Insurers, and Public Programs in Responding to the Panic. They say pandemic. I say it was a panic engineered by the Democrats. When the federal government ends COVID-19 emergency declarations that were declared in the early days of the panic, it will bring to a close several changes that were enacted to temporarily enable the U.S. healthcare system to better deal with the crisis. A new Kaiser Family Foundation resource details a number of those flexibilities and lays out what it will mean for people, providers, and federal health programs when they go away. One of the key declarations of the COVID-19 public health emergency is slated to expire on April 16th, though it's expected to be renewed by the Biden administration. The end of the emergency declaration also will bring about a ramping down of heightened federal spending related to the panic, which was always intended to be temporary. The changes will eliminate a pathway through Medicaid to free COVID-19 testing, treatment, and vaccines for people without health insurance. And that could trigger higher out-of-pocket costs for tests for people with private insurance. Millions of people could lose Medicaid coverage when the continuous enrollment requirement ends and the federal government shuts off panic-related enhancement federal Medicaid funding. Most Medicare beneficiaries would lose access to coverage of nearly all telehealth services. Now, that's too bad because I think telehealth is an excellent improvement in the Medicare system. But they're saying most Medicare beneficiaries would lose access to coverage of nearly all telehealth services within a few months, with some exceptions. And hospitals would no longer receive a special panic-related 20% increase in Medicare payments for treatment of patients diagnosed with COVID-19. Well, I think that's a good thing. Geez, because that's why the death count was so high. It was because they were paying a bounty on anybody that died with COVID-19 symptoms or with the antibodies in their system.
Last week they would have noted that as something else, but now it's COVID.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
The guy had a broken pelvis, but we're pretty sure it was COVID.
Yeah. You know, and these 95-year-old people are dropping dead like they always do. But all of a sudden there's a new reason. There's a new cause of death that gets them extra money from our very generous federal government. So
it's we just didn't know, Doug. We didn't realize it's all COVID related. We've just not known that for decades.
But guess what's going to happen when those extra payments stop? All of a sudden, nobody's going to die of COVID anymore.
That's you got weird. That right. You got that right.
So in addition, any COVID tests, vaccines, therapeutics that were granted emergency authorization for use but have not been approved by the FDA could no longer be used. Yeah, well, they've always been a little funky about the there's a name for those therapeutics, I guess, that have been used to treat the symptoms of COVID. And I think they've brought a lot of relief to a lot of people. So the new Kaiser Family Foundation resource addresses flexibilities adopted during COVID-19 panic and implications of their drawing to a close in the following areas. And they talk about the areas, including telehealth, Medicaid coverage and federal match rates, coverage costs and payments for testing and all that, other Medicare payment. I think we've been down this road before. So let's move on to the last half of the article. What happens? Implications for coverage, costs, and access. This is written by Julie Kubansky. Let's see, follow her on Twitter, blah, blah, blah. Okay, well, this is also April 8th. So with more than 2 years having passed since the COVID-19 panic began in early 2020, questions are being raised about when to end the public health emergency declarations made by the federal government early on, with some advocating for their extension and others calling for their expiration. There are numerous implications to ending these emergency declarations, each of which gave the federal government flexibilities to waive or modify certain requirements in a range of areas, including the Medicare, Medicaid, and CHIP programs, which is children's health insurance, and in private health insurance, as well as to allow for the authorization of medical countermeasures and to provide liability immunity to providers who administer services, among other things. In addition, Congress also enacted legislation that provided additional flexibilities tied to one or more of these emergency declarations. And as such, they too are scheduled to expire when or at a specific time after the emergency period expires. This brief provides an overview of the major health-related COVID-19 federal emergency declarations that have been made, summarizes the flexibilities triggered by each, and identifies the implications of their ending in the following areas: coverages, cost payments for COVID-19 testing, Medicaid coverage and federal match rates, telehealth, other Medicaid and CHIP flexibilities. CHIP is, again, children's health insurance. Other Medicare payment and coverage flexibilities, other private insurance coverage flexibilities. God, when the government makes a panic declaration, it affects so many things. Access to medical countermeasures, vaccines, tests, and treatments through FDA emergency use authorization. And then finally, liability immunity to administer medical countermeasures. This is not meant to be an exhaustive list. Well, it exhausted me just reading about it. Regulatory provisions made in response to COVID-19 emergency declarations. For example, we do not cover the entire range of federal and state emergency authorities exercised under Medicaid Disaster Relief State Plan Amendments, SPAs, and other Medicaid and Chip Spy. Aren't you glad you tuned in today, ladies and gentlemen? I'm telling you right now, this is a very distressing article because of all the far-reaching government intrusion into the medical services area. It's incredible that a few signatures on a few pieces of paper can have such a huge impact on the American economy and our way of life. An overview of the major health-related COVID-19 federal emergency declarations is what follows here. The early days of the COVID-19 panic were marked by several emergency declarations made by the federal government under several broad authorities, each of which has a different requirement relating to expiration. A public health emergency, which they call a PHE, was initially declared by the Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services in late January 2020, pursuant to Section 319 of the Public Health Service Act. A public health emergency lasts for 90 days and must be renewed to continue. The PHE for COVID-19 has been renewed several times, most recently in January of 2022, and is currently scheduled to expire in mid-April. The Biden administration has said that it will give states a 60-day notice before the PHE expires. That sounds like they plan to renew it. A national emergency declaration was issued by former President Donald Trump in March of 2020, pursuant to Section 201 of the National Emergencies Act. A national emergency declaration is in effect unless terminated by the president or through a joint resolution of Congress, or if the president does not issue a continuation notice annually. Such a notice was issued by President Trump to continue the emergency beyond March 1st, 2021, and by President Biden to continue beyond March 1st, 2022. A separate emergency declaration pursuant to Section 564 of the Food and Drug and Cosmetic Act was issued by the Secretary of HHS in February of 2020. Boy, we have way too many government functionaries, I'll tell you. Based on this determination, on March 27th of 2020, the secretary declared that the circumstances existed to justify emergency use authorization of medical countermeasures for COVID-19. An EUA, an emergency use authorization, is a mechanism to facilitate availability and use of medical countermeasures that are determined to be safe and effective, but have not yet been formally approved. An emergency declaration issued pursuant to Section 564 of the Act remains in effect until terminated by the HHS Secretary. And finally, a declaration under Public Readiness and Emergency Preparedness Act. You didn't know this was going to be a lesson in government operations and civics, did you? This, pursuant to the Public Health Service Act, was issued by the Secretary of HHS in March of 2020. This declaration provides liability immunity for activities related to COVID-19 medical countermeasures. Since then, 10 amendments to the declaration have been issued to extend liabilities related to countermeasures. For a PREP Act emergency determination, the Secretary must specify an end date. In this case, it has been set as October of 2024. All right, Randy, I've had it. This is just another example of malfeasance, in my opinion. What do you think?
Holy bananas. There's more acts and signatures and wherefore art thou than I ever heard of.
That last part, giving everybody the protection against legal action for their treatment and their decisions, bothers me a lot, because we were just talking about all the bodies that were hauled out of hospitals with a toe tag that said died of COVID, died of COVID, died of COVID, and all the extra money the government forked over just for that diagnosis. Now, if the government hadn't said, we're going to give you extra money, that diagnosis would have been a normal, rational thing. But I think what happened was people dying of other old age related illnesses, none of those happened. Nobody died of pneumonia. Nobody died of the flu. Nobody died of natural causes, as people are prone.
I was amazed, because as soon as the COVID hit,
yep.
Did you realize that people were living much longer because they couldn't die of natural causes?
Right. There were no natural cause deaths. Everybody had COVID.
I know. It's funny how that all happened. But, you know, I was going to tell you one thing. This is probably, you don't know this, but I was able to get a copy of the email that the, you know, the Washington sent to each of the state governors.
Wow. How did you get on that list?
I'm not going to tell you, but okay. you know what it says?
What does it say?
Hey, folks, we're fixing to cancel all the special funding for COVID. Do you want us to extend it?
Yeah, I think they got back 51 yeses.
Yes, they did. That was amazing.
Actually, let's not paint everybody with the same broad brush. I think there are a few governors that we would stand behind who would not have answered yes to that.
Well, you're right. You're right.
But all it would have taken was one for the current administration is okay. Oh, that's what we're going to do.
Yeah, there's one turkey out there that wants it extended. Okay, we're going to go for it. Hey, I got one more question for you.
Sure.
And I'm not sure this fits into this conversation, but
when does that ever stop this?
It really doesn't. Over the weekend, I read that a judge said that forcing people to wear masks on public transit is impinging on their constitutional rights. So she ended it. How does that fit into all this and as well as the past?
Well, apparently the judge is a doctor who understood that the germs are not passed from one person to another on airplanes. Unlike all of the other people who said, oh, no, people must be enslaved forever and ever and ever. Yeah. And so actually, I think what the doctor, what the judge said was that the president didn't have the authority to keep that imposition in place. I heard somebody interpret it that way. And so okay. I say, God bless that judge. Let's find her a job where she can even have more impact on everyday American life, because freedom is what this country is all about.
I'm not sure President Biden had authority to do any of this.
I'm pretty sure that he didn't, but people rolled over and allowed it to happen. Look what happened in California. It was turned into almost like a concentration camp. There was a restaurant, a family-owned restaurant. It had been around since the 50s, I think, a really long time, in Pasadena. And the city of Pasadena said, our guidance dictates that we must close you down. You cannot have customers inside your restaurant and bar. And so they said, well, we're setting up an outside seating area. And we know from scientific fact, that the virus does not spread outside. And the city said, well, we told you to shut down, so you're going to shut down. And they said, no, we're not going to shut down. We're going to have our outside seating. So the city came in and put barbed wire around the place and took the doors off and did a bunch of, it's shut off the utilities and basically drove this very popular family restaurant out of business. And I think that happened many times over, all over California. And that's why you'll never catch me doing anything that benefits California until they come to their senses.
Oh, absolutely not. I totally agree with you. I mean, that whatever happened to due process? Bottom line is that was totally outside of due process.
There's one political party that used this panic created panic to use that excuse to remove basic human rights and due process and all of that. They managed to suspend that during the what they defined as an emergency and what other people say. Hey, you know, we know who gets this. We know who's at risk and we know how to protect them from it. Nobody paid any attention to the actual facts of this thing. It was all panic. We can tell you what to do, and we're going to do that. Well,
that's
that disturbs
right.
me. That disturbs me a lot.
Well, that whole thing, I mean, it doesn't you know, surprise you, but that whole situation disturbs me, and it's still disturbing me. But the most of it now is after the fact. But, you know, $5 and some cent gas, you know, those kinds of things are going to take a long time to cycle themselves down.
Well, that's a longer area of damage that the one political party is doing to our economy. I mean, they've shut down pipeline construction. They've shut down the approval. I mean, they're selling leases, and they'll tell you they're selling leases on federal land to people who want to drill, but they're not issuing drilling permits. They're lying to you. They continue to obfuscate and to cover up their nefarious activities. Meanwhile, what are they going to do? Fly airplanes on battery power, solar power?
I heard I heard they can fly some jets on cooking oil. Now I'm not sure.
I want to see that.
I'm not sure I want to get on a jet down at Sky Harbor that, you know, it's working on cooking oil and gets a fry stuck in the fuel line.
Yeah, I think there are probably a few things wrong with that. If we've got a robust air travel industry, I don't know why they want to mess with the fuel that powers that industry, but they appear to do that. They appear to want to destroy our economy and all the progress we've made over the last century or so.
No, I totally agree with you. Well, you know, having said all that, we are out of time.
Boy, oh boy, I had so much more to say.
I know. And, you know, we did get past, what was it? Not this time, but the previous podcast, we finally got done with the 52 weeks to paradise, right?
Well, actually, I just did it the previous episode, and it's still ringing in my ears. I'm thinking, if you ever see me holding a document of that thickness, just I want you to shoot me or you know,
I'm gonna make sure I don't do it. When I see you walk into the studio with that, I'm going to go, oh, Doug, I'm not feeling well.
Yeah, that one was a fooler. It started out sounding so good. The reasons why Medicare Advantage plans are bad. But, you know, 52 pages later, they were equivocal. They were not you know, solid black and white.
They didn't stick to their thesis statement.
Agreed. Agreed, sir.
Well, you know, we need to sign her off here. But before we do that, there's several, you know, end of episode things I always need to take care of. Send Doug some email at dbj@mlmmailbag.com. It keeps his smile on his face every day when he looks in his email to see some of that. As we've said, the 2022 paperback is out. That's the one with the green 2022 label on the cover. The audio will be out someday. Amazon has promised Doug the audio will be out sometime before it's all stale. And the Kindle is out. But in the meantime, Doug is snug as a bug in a rug in his fortress of solitude outside Cave Creek, Arizona, waiting for the news to come that his yacht license as a captain has been approved.